This is Generation Justice, a multimedia project that trains youth to harness the power of community through media narrative and critical consciousness. I'm Edgar Cruz. Tonight, we share presentations from the community discussion supporting a safe campus environment, preventing gun violence and racism, hosted by the UNM College of Population and Health, in partnership with entities across campus and the community. Speakers include former Poet Laureate of Santa Fe, Valerie Martinez, Carol Pierce, Director of Family and Community Services, Gilbert Ramirez, Deputy Director for Health Programs for the City of Albuquerque, Officer Tish Young of the UNM Police Department, Diana Lopez, Health Promotion Specialist with Department of Health, and Riazula Aliquaze, GJ Intern and Community Liaison. We begin with an opening from the discussion host, Dr. Nina Wallerstein, Director of the Center for Participatory Research and Professor with the UNM College of Population Health.
My name is Nina Wallerstein, and I welcome you all. And we know that snow and rain might have kept some of you away. And also, it's the end of the semester. And that's also not so good for students who are finishing final papers, et cetera. But we welcome you. And this is the beginning of a dialogue, and we think to a very, very important public health problem that Dr. Collins just laid out. And there are really a couple of interrelated issues. There's the issues of guns. We have more guns in this country than any other country per capita. We have more guns than people in this country. There's the issue of gun violence and deaths from guns. And of course, mass shootings are not the principal reason that people are killed from guns. There's much, much more gun violence, and suicide is even a higher rate than homicide. But mass shootings, as Dr. Collins just said, and close to home, the El Paso shootings, where actually shooter said he was targeting Mexicans, alerted us, it scared us, it said, what can we do in our campus itself? And we wanted this forum not just to be a campus forum, but a forum that crossed campus and community, because we're all part of the same city, and that we hope to create healthy communities among all of the various communities that we work with, et cetera. And so even though mass shootings are small numbers, there were 373 people killed in last year in mass shootings, they're on the rise. And in addition, there's the issue of hate and racism that Dr. Collins also mentioned, which is on the rise. And unfortunately, from 2017 to 2018, hate crimes in this state have quadrupled. That's in 1 year. So it's something that we all need to be concerned about and not just say it's a gun issue or a mental health issue. So a lot of people say, well, mental illness is the culprit. Only 4% of gun-related fatalities are committed by people who have been identified as having mental illness. So we're talking a much bigger problem, and we need to figure out ways. And we wanted this to be an action-oriented forum so that we all could begin to work together collaboratively. And I know that there's been forums in the city as well. And so we just want to keep that conversation going and bring it to campus. But to start us off, we thought we would start with honoring kind of the importance of thinking creatively out of the box, not just getting all these statistics that can make us feel overwhelmed. And we wanted to start with welcoming Valerie Martinez, who's a poet, lives here, but a while ago was the Poet Laureate of Santa Fe, but she's a poet and an artist and is the author of 6 books of poetry. Her poetry has appeared in many different journals and magazines, but we welcome her tonight, not as an awardee, but as someone who can give us an inspiration. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Elegy for El Paso. Elegía para El Paso. Jordan Anchondo. Andre Anchondo. Arturo Benavides. Jorge Calvillo García. Leonard Cepeda Campos. Maribel Hernández. Adolfo Cerros Hernández. Sarah Esther Regalado. Angelina Englishby, Raúl Flores, María Flores, Alexander Gerhard Hoffman, David Alva Johnson, Luis Alfonso Juarez, Maria Eugenia Legarreta Roth, Ivan Ilierto Manzano, Elsa Libera Márquez, Gloria Irma Márquez, Margie Ricard, Javier Amir Rodriguez, Teresa Sánchez de Freitas, Juan Velázquez. She who is someone's thorn, he who is someone's prickle, she who is someone's fragment, he who is someone's shard, ella que es la sangre de alguien, él que es la tinta roja de alguien, ella que tiene las piernas de alguien, él que tiene los pesados de alguien. He who is someone's slivers, she who is someone's eyebrows, he who is someone's beard, she who is someone's buttocks, él que es los pedacitos de alguien, ella que es los cachos de alguien, él que tiene el plumaje quetzal de alguien. He who has kinsmen, she who has second kin, he who has third kin, el que tiene el hígado del otro, el que tiene las entrañas de otra. All who came out of someone's belly, who breathe with someone's lungs, all who emerge from someone's throat.
So it's really important to remember the people who suffer and who have lost their lives. So thank you. So I want to welcome Carol Pierce and Gilbert Ramirez from the city to start us off. We are part of the large community. Carol Pierce is director of the Department of Family and Community Services in the city of Albuquerque, and a longtime public health person, was at this Stanford Health Department for many, many years. Known her for a long time. And with Gilbert Ramirez, who's joining her tonight, deputy director of the same department and also works in health and wellness and behavioral health services. So welcome, both of you. And you can set the stage for us in how we think about the campus as part of the larger community.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much to start with the poem that was so just started us off on the right step this evening. And just thank you. Really, we were honored to be invited to be part of the conversation. So here in the Department of Family and Community Services, we're the department that does a lot across a whole spectrum here in our city. And you'll hear a little bit about this as Gilbert and I talk about it. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to serve under our mayor. I will say, and I know so many of you in the room from all of our public health work for many, many years, I will say I'm in the city with the dream team. I'm really excited with this mayor. What one of the visions he had was to appoint more people. We have more depth in our department with having more deputies that come to the table with some really great experience. And Gilbert is a great example of that. As a nurse, as a social worker, we're really delighted that we bring that lens to our work in the city. And I'm just really grateful that I've got those kinds of partners here. And I really am always grateful for the mayor for having that vision that it takes people with some different kinds of experience to really help lead us forward in our community. So we thought in true fashion, we should start with a bit of a public health framework. And so we're going to follow this as we move through to talk about a little bit of the problem, to identify risk and protective factors, talk a little bit about some of the prevention strategies that we're thinking about in the city, and then thinking about the widespread adoption. And we had to be a little careful that we know we only have 6 to 8 minutes, so we're covering the surface. So I know we could talk a lot about the statistics, and I think, again, the poem that we began with reminds us of our neighbors to the south and how we were all very deeply affected by that. We include some about the gun violence across our country, the big events, you know, El Paso, Parkland, Las Vegas. But again, it's so important to remember the frequent events that happen every day that affect communities of color that don't make the headlines. And sometimes it's hidden, it's unknown, and that's what our media may perpetuate. And so we just have to acknowledge that. And that's why I was so excited to be invited here at this starting point, this starting conversation as we move forward as the city with our UNM partners and other agencies. So in Albuquerque, we do know, and we've got some statistics in here. If you look roughly over the last year, October of 18 to September of 19, we had about 968 youth under age 24 who were victims of aggravated assault. So may have had some kind of use of a weapon. And another roughly 500 were suspects under age 24. So I think as we're here at the UNM campus, and we know that the UNM, the age here on UNM is widespread. It's not just all young folks, but we're thinking a lot in some of the stats that we're covering tonight about our young people, because I think our young people are our future. So really close to home, we just remember, and I thought of including the names about the five teenagers that were shot and killed in our community in September, and then the recent tragic loss of the woman on the west side. So again, it just brings it very close to home every day when we read the headlines. And again, acknowledge it affects all parts of our community, and that we just need to be aware of that and to highlight that this is a public health emergency, and this is something that we need to talk about and move forward. So a few other pieces. We just want to show that in this aggravated assault, this just shows the age starting at age 11 up to 23, the age that that covered, and being the most at age 23. But I mean, really the point here is it's affecting many, many young people across the spectrum, life-changing events when people are affected by aggravated assault. And similarly, the next slide is just showing starting at age one, and it skips from one and two up to age 10 with children and youth that were victimized in the last year. And this is all data that we get from the APD Crime Analysis Unit. And a lot of this data we're looking at as a city, we're recognizing this is a problem and we've got to do something about it.
Buenas tardes. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for having me here. I'll probably talk really fast because 6 minutes goes quickly. So with regards to kind of disparities, how it responds and reports in the media, disparities where gun violence are, we have to understand there's a difference with regards to mass shootings and losses in our community. And it's really important to understand that because we're looking at both issues. And I am just excited to hear that the university is taking that issue on and looking at that. But there is a difference. And so when looking at this, the reason we present some of this data to you is to understand that it's mostly our young people who are either the victims of and or committing this crime, which is telling in itself. And we are working to take a public health look at this, but also my background is in behavior health. So looking at what are the conditions and the disparities that exist in our communities with young people and what resources do they have, whether that's a single household with one parent, no parent, whether they're living under poverty. We also have to understand that mental health becomes an issue of discussion as well as substance use, right? And then there's the topics of basic survival. And so understanding what are we seeing in our community and what are we looking at and how is that really different from mass shootings? And there is a distinction because what we see in our community is a lot different with the losses that we have versus what we're seeing nationwide with the mass shootings and those who are committing those. So identifying risk and protective factors, one of the big things that the city had never done before is really have an intentional way to look at social determinants of health and how we are either addressing that or is that built into the work that we do. So in my division alone over behavioral health, we have around $10 million invested in programs from early prevention, intervention, all the way through adults and substance use. But we are working now to kind of collect data intentionally around social determinants of health and really have that feed us to say, are we spending money in the appropriate areas based on what our community is saying their needs are? So we are looking at moving toward that. And I just came back from New York where there was a Cities Thrive conference around all cities and mayors who are committed to addressing mental health. And social determinants of health is a huge topic of discussion. And sadly, we weren't part of that. We weren't collecting that. We didn't have that data. And so now it's a part of what we are doing under vision. We're starting to collect that and move that forward. Input from the community via the Bernalillo County Health Council. So one thing we were asked to do when we came on board, the mayor said, you know what? The city doesn't have a department of health or public health. And do we need one? And he looked to us to really give a recommendation to say, do we need to create one? So we could have come back and said, yes, let's invest a lot of money to create a department because that's what it takes. And or could we look to our community to really pull upon the expertise that already exists? And so one thing that came as a result of that is that we began to put a constructive proposal together that did get approved by council to allocate a small amount of money to engage a partner, which was the Bernalillo County Health Council, to help us in doing the data collection, engaging the community, and saying we have expertise in our own community. And that's really important for us. So that's new for us.
One of the things that we often talk about is in our department, we start at a very young age. We have 25 child development centers. And I always like to bring this up because that's where we believe prevention starts, where we're really identifying, we're working with children, we're working with their families, we're identifying food insecurity, housing concerns. But that's the whole piece on prevention. We do know, and we could talk a lot about trauma when kids are exposed to trauma early on, and we think it's very important what we're doing at child development centers. We like to say it's probably one of the most important things that's happening in the city. And most people don't realize the city's operating 25 child development centers, serving about 800 children across our community every day. Secondly, community centers. We operate 22 community centers all over the place. I hope. How many of you have been to one? I hope. Oh, love it. So what I really want to say here is we're promoting community connections, and that is so important. And I could give a lot of examples. We're often out at our community centers and seeing people gathering in the evenings, our swing dance group over at Heights Community Center. Sometimes I think preventing violence, reducing racism, it's about creating connections. It's about knowing our neighbors. It's about knowing their names and who they are. And they may look different than we look in our family, but it's really making those connections and becoming familiar with who's in our neighborhood. We talked about the ALICE model, and I do want to say we are doing training across the city. And how many of you are familiar with the ALICE model? I'll just encourage you to maybe Google that and check it out with the ALICE Training Institute. Like most things, it's an acronym, but it's about alerting, it's about informing, it's about giving people a tool if they were feeling threatened, what they would do. And all of our community centers are trained around that, our health and social service centers. It's something that we're actively doing in the city to acknowledge that something could happen.
Okay, quickly. So based on the data that we gave you, we identified that really the age of 24 and under is a vital and vulnerable group as regards to violence and what's happening. So we have around $733,000 dedicated toward looking at partners who can engage with the city to do this intervention, prevention, and vital work in the community. This is our second attempt at a problem-based RFP that we issued, soliciting input from the community to give us their solutions as to how we can go about looking at the whole spectrum. We included the data, we presented the problem, and we asked for innovative solutions in our nonprofits and community to come to us and say, what proposals do you have so we can start addressing this issue? And so we're excited about this, but this has been in the works since the summer. We've started to see that this was something that we had to address. We put it together. It was issued. It's been out about a month. And so we're very excited about how we're going to go about doing that. Now, with regards to mental health, I sit as the chair for the Kids Cabinet Public Safety Work Group. One of the things that we have, and we have young people on that group, is we talk to them around what things do you all feel we could promote and do to make your community a little bit safer, and understanding that previously some of these kids' cabinets didn't allow immigrant youth on there because it was a background check and a process. Well, that wasn't the case with this group. We allowed everyone to come through, and we understood that, guess what? The safety concerns of a young immigrant youth are a lot different than just a youth in our community, right? I mean, they're worried about different issues, and they're worried for their parents. And so they came forward and said, you know what, Minister, a lot of people are afraid of us. They think we're violent, dangerous, and it's because we're living with other issues. Mental health is one. And because there was not a lot of education in that, we partnered with the Department of Health as well as NMCAL to offer. And our goal was to hit about 500 trainings in the community where you could get mental health first aid certified. That was completed. It was done. We're at about 400 people, and we're about 4 months shy of our target date. So we will continue to promote that. And it's free. Our trainings are free. So one of the other things we did is we partnered with UNM Echo. Echo is a great model to share knowledge virtually. And so Downtown Public Safety has been working to say, how do we bring in business partners, people in the area, youth to go to those schools and talk about it. Today, they finished their third series in a row with regards to active shooter training and using real situations around the city that have happened and sharing that knowledge. So it's breaking down a little bit of the understanding is how does APD respond to that? And also, what are the concerns that our community has as far as do you own a business, a school, and or how's that look for you? So just sharing that. And I know we got to wrap up. So working together as a community to implement this work, really, it's going to take all of us in understanding that. I will say, you know, a lot of the data that we show is what we're seeing is young people of Hispanic background committing crimes on other young people of Hispanic background. But I will say a majority of the mass shootings that have been looked at since 1982 to now have been committed primarily by Anglo white males. And this stems into the conversation of today as to why are mass shootings different?
with regards to just violence happening in our community. And I think it's real. I'm appreciative of the fact that there's a space here to start that dialogue and talk about it. It is a specific issue. I worked for APS years ago when we had Columbine, and the APS district tasked all of us to come together as a work group to create the threat management or threat assessment protocol. There is no real 100% way to predict violence, but there are a lot of precursors that we can be involved with understanding that, and if we see them, to do interventions before it reaches that point. You know, so collectively, I think it's a good way for you all to come together and say, what areas do we need to look at? There's also the earlier issue of gun access. Understanding that that plays a critical role is just saying, well, how available are guns in this state? We do live in cowboy country, so they're pretty readily available. So that's something to consider also. So with that, I will close up and say thank you. I know we went a little over.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Generation Justice. You have just heard former Poet Laureate of Santa Fe, Valerie Martinez, Carol Pierce, Director of Family and Community Services, and Gilbert Ramirez, Deputy Director for Health Programs for the City of Albuquerque. Let's rejoin Supporting a Safe Campus Environment, Preventing Gun Violence and Racism.
So we're going to go back a little bit between campus and community. So I want to welcome Tish Young, who actually represents the campus. She's a detective here with the UNM Police Department for the last 23 years. And she's been really helpful in actually in contributing to developing this forum, too, and in trying to understand the safety needs on campus, and is actually chairing right now the UNM Campus Safety Council. So for us, if we develop recommendations going forward, she can bring them directly to the President's Safety Council to go directly to President Stokes. So this is really a welcome opportunity. And thank you, Carol and Gilbert, for giving us a public health perspective and frame. I really appreciate that.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I'm going to start by talking a little bit about the UNM Police Department. And as you see here, that we try to reflect our community, and our community and our police department are pretty equal in ethnic comparison as far as the population goes, which is great, but we always change. Our community is always changing. In the past, we've recruited already certified officers, lateral officers from other agencies, and that was a cost and a time factor. But now we're actually recruiting non-certified officers so that we can recruit more people from our very own community. And we think that's really important because we want to keep our community tight-knit. We want to, like Carol said, we really need to communicate with each other and really be open and know what's going on everywhere and who everyone is. Our officers were trained in firearms, active shooter response, crisis intervention, de-escalation techniques, explicit, implicit bias, and hate crimes. And those are just some of the areas that we are trained in. There's a lot more training, but as you can see, we're pretty well-rounded in the training that we go through. And I just wanted to reflect on, right now, our officers are down in our female category. And so we would love to have people come in and join our force as females. We think that representing the community equally, males and females, is really important also. It's just that we have to hire by ability and by the people that are qualified. And right now, we need to recruit females. So if you know anyone, our officers are really good at getting to campus locations quickly because we have over 500 buildings. We have over 2,000 alarmed areas, and our officers have to respond to those. So they're constantly going around campus. And every time we go around campus, we're looking at buildings that have a large number of students, staff, and faculty. And we're looking at it as, hey, if an emergency happens here, what are we going to do? How are we going to approach this? How are we going to react? We're always training, not just formal training, but within our shifts. We're always training, talking about how we're going to work together. We do some of these trainings with other agencies, active shooter training. We go out in vacant buildings and we set it up like a real life scenario. Fire alarms, smoke, you know, the whole bit. And we train as if it were a real event. And we do that because you know, we have children, we have grandchildren, we have loved ones in schools, in colleges, in workplaces that may be a target one day. And we want every officer to do the things that we do to prepare for anything that should happen. We want to be as prepared as we can, and we trust that other agencies are doing the same thing. UNM itself has really good safety avenues, alarm systems, Lobo alerts, blue light emergency phones, campus escort services, the Lobo Guardian application. And every time we go out and talk to people, we're always talking about those things. We want them to be on the Lobo Guardian app. We tell about those features. We tell about the blue phones that are GPS located. All those blue phones around campus, you press that button. If you can't talk, if you're having a medical emergency and you can't talk, we know where you are and we can respond to that. So there's a lot of things that UNM provides as safety measures that we need to share with our population constantly. So that being said, gun violence on campus, there are no guns allowed on campus, and we keep on top of that. We have different ways to approach that, but we, in the past, last 3 years, we've had 3 illegal weapons arrests in 2018, 1 illegal weapons arrest in 2017, 2 in 2019. So we really keep that up, and we keep that public, that there are no firearms allowed on the campus. Gun violence on campus, as far as race-related, we're finding that only 2%, according to the FBI, were biased-related on campus. Most of them are intimate relationships, domestic violence, stalking, harassment, and those are other things that our officers are well-trained at so that we can take that incident that happens that doesn't seem real serious and take it serious because we know what could happen from that. And so we're always trying to provide resources, intervene when we need to. We're looking at the big picture. We're looking at the future. So when we see red flag behaviors, we're on top of it. We're really involved trying to get them involved in resources around campus. Hate crimes, again, UNM is very cognizant of all the ethnic groups around campus, all the other groups on campus that feel like they're targeted for things. We try to train with them. We try to go out and keep good communication flowing so we know what's going on. We're always out there because it's our community. You know, we serve our community. And even though we're within the city, UNM, the people are from everywhere, all different cultures, all different locations, and every year is different. So we really have to keep up. And that's one of the hard things to do is keep that communication going so that over and over again, we're revisiting. We want to know what population we have at any given time. And that's always changing. So coming to the Campus Safety Council, one of the reasons that President Stokes created this Campus Safety Council this year was that we didn't feel all the safety groups on campus were communicating enough, that we were missing that link. So we coordinated all the safety groups on campus so that if there's any safety concerns that come to the council that say they're not police related, we have a place to address them. If they're environmental issues, if they're safety issues that aren't police related, anything to do with safety is covered in this Campus Safety Council. We try to communicate with North Campus and Main Campus and South Campus, all the safety messages in the same manner. So we want consistency, we want shared openness. And so that shows all the groups that are connected to the Campus Safety Council. The areas with high student concentration are kind of like ad hoc committees. We find area that has a specific problem and we target, we problem solve, we come together to find out how to resolve those issues. And then once we get that resolved, we go on to another area. So we're always jumping from area to area, trying to problem solve all those different things that we see happening on campus. And a lot of them are interconnected.
So
community policing, of course, is something that is really important here, and that is part of the Campus Safety Council. We're always trying to get out there and talk to people, communicate in different ways. We now have a safety topic of the month that changes every month on our website. We use the Campus Safety website to connect all these resources. So we are really focused on uniting the entire campus in all safety issues and not just focusing on police issues. But we do have a job to do, and we feel like we are prepared to handle any crisis that happens on campus. Thank you.
So I just wanted to go back to the city. I do appreciate that you put up the definition of hate crime. And just to say that in the nation of hate crimes, 58% are perceived to be as motivated by racism, 22% by religious bias, and 17% by bias against LGBTQ people. And so it's a broader issue, and I think we all have to be thinking of how we can support each other against the rising hate and fear that people have. So I appreciate that you put up the definition. I now want to welcome Diana Lopez, who is a health promotion specialist from the Department of Health, New Mexico Department of Health, working in the city and county. And she has been part of looking at a violence prevention initiative and trying to do some of the focus groups and interviews with residents about, and I think with the Bernalillo County Health Council that Carol and Gilbert mentioned. So perfect segue. So thank you so much.
First off, I just really want to thank you all for allowing me to be in this space with you. I feel very honored and I'm happy to be here. And again, my name is Diana Lopez, and I work for the New Mexico Department of Health as a health promotion specialist. But I'm here today as a team member of a violence prevention initiative that started way before I even worked for the Department of Health with the Bernalillo County Health Council. And I kind of jumped on board back in November of 2018. The Health Council had a kind of violence prevention summit. And it was a very large summit held down at the convention center. They were probably over like 200 people there and all talking about violence prevention. Fast forward, after that summit, we had gathered some information from participants and we asked, what are you interested in? What topics around violence? Violence is a huge topic. And they let us know that they were interested in talking about domestic violence, suicide, gun violence, youth violence, intimate partner violence. I mean, we had a very long list. And our team got together and we were kind of like, oh my gosh, where do we start? Where do we begin? You know, we all talk about the mass shootings and around the same time, it was back in February of this year at Cleveland High School, there was a gun. A student was on campus with a gun with an intent to shoot. My daughter goes to Cleveland High School. So it was definitely like an experience I've never, ever, ever want anyone to feel. After that, it kind of happened that working with the Health Council, the city actually approached, again, like was just mentioned, the Health Council in regard to partnering and talking about gun violence in particular. So we thought, okay, we have a focus. This is cool. You know, we can do this. So we got together, and I want to mention everyone who was on this team because this was definitely a collaborative effort and is a collaborative effort with a huge partnership with the Health Council, with health promotion from DOH. We have Enrique here and Matt, who's also a health promotion specialist, and the city. This is a huge partnership. We've also been working with the DA's office with their community-based crime reduction initiative. Her name is Virginia. And we also have some partners with APD and the Real-Time Crime Center. And also even partnering with JPO, with juvenile justice, because this is an everybody issue. This is something that everyone can definitely work on. So we started doing focus groups. we thought, okay, let's do some focus groups. And then later on, we thought, okay, let's implement an online survey. We thought, okay, maybe we'll get 100 surveys. We ended up collecting 150 surveys, and we actually had to close it because we had to analyze our data by the end of October. So we thought, this is fantastic. And it was an eye-opener for us, for all of us who worked on the team. We ended up doing 11 focus groups, talking to so many different people in the community. We talked to youth. We talked to youth at various different locations. We talked to public health professionals. We talked to law enforcement. We talked to students here on UNM campus. We talked to just like a multitude of people. But the thing that we kind of opened our eyes and realized that we were barely touching the tip of the iceberg. This is still just like our phase one. And I kind of keep saying that this is our phase one. We still have so much work to do. And we hope to continue that and bring in more partners. And every chance we get, we try to talk about this. And we hope that we can gather more people to help us rally and talk to more people in our community, in our county. I want to just talk a little bit about what was said at the focus groups. I wasn't able to get a lot of quotes because obviously this is just a short amount of time, but I brought in two. One was, we're teaching our babies to be afraid from a young age. And this was like really hit me hard, especially as a mom, because I had to talk to my 7-year-old daughter about, what is it? Hide, fight. Yes, run, hide, fight. So for me, I never thought as a mom I would have to do that. So that really kind of touched me. And then another quote was, people don't fear us unless we're strapped. And that came from one of our youth focus groups. From our online survey, we asked the question, what does gun violence mean to you? The top two answers were preventable death and intentional misuse of guns. Another question we asked was, do you feel safe? Out of all our respondents, 68 of those 150 said yes. But as we were analyzing, we were really reading responses because all of our responses were open-ended questions. A lot of them said, yes, but I don't go shopping at night. I have a weapon. I sleep with a weapon at night. And we kind of started thinking about it. Is that feeling safe? It kind of opened up the door to so many more questions. Another question was, why do people own guns? 120 respondents said, for protection. Who is most likely to be a victim of gun violence? And this is one that has stuck with me throughout this whole process. The number one response was everyone. Everyone can be a victim of gun violence. And that, you know, it's true. It could happen to anyone, and we're seeing it everywhere we go. Just so to close up, we've had some wonderful presentations with the city, and we're hoping to continue. We are going to continue these, and some recommendations from the Health Council that was given to the city and from our team were to focus on resources, focused universalism, serving all with a focus on those most in need. Adequate services, ensuring that social services are funded 100% for intervention. So fund a service, but make sure that it's adequately funded to provide that service to everyone, not just some limited amount of people. And universal reduction in violence. So that means everyone, this is a public health emergency, yes, 100%. And again, like the respondent in the survey, this touches everyone, and this is definitely something that we can all work on together. And we don't want anyone to get killed. If you're an officer, if you're a student, if you're a mother, if you're a father, even if you do have a history and a criminal background, we don't want anyone to be shot and killed. So that's kind of the view that we're coming and approaching it. And I just want to thank you again so much for allowing me to be here. And again, for the Health Council, Enrique, Matt, Virginia, Vanessa, Pelletia, everyone who is on this team. And if you are interested in helping us and working and moving forward, we have a lot of plans and hope to move forward in the coming year with getting things kind of going in prevention. Thank you so much again.
So for the students in the room, I hear that there may be practicum opportunities working with the Bernalillo County Health Council and working with the City Department of Family and Community Services. So please, we'll try and make these linkages happen. So we want to end this part of the program with a student and someone who comes from a couple years of working with Generation Justice, Riazullah Ali Kozai, Afghan-American student who is a student in political science and international studies and is going to bring us back to the campus perspective, but also as a young person, as a youth who can speak from what it means. Also, Diana, thank you so much. What people are actually saying on the ground.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Riazullah Ali Kozai, and I am a 20 years old Afghan-American, and I'm a student here at UNM studying political science and international studies. My pronouns are he, him, and his. I have been with Generation Justice for about 2 years, and now I am a community liaison intern. Generation Justice is a multiracial, multicultural project that trains youth to harness the power of community and raise critical consciousness through leadership development, civic engagement, multimedia productions, and narrative shift. GJ's mission is to inspire youth to become multidimensional leaders who are committed to social transformation. Today, I'm here to tell you about myself. I was born and raised in a refugee camp, born into an Afghan refugee family, the refugee camp that's at the outskirts of Peshawar City in Pakistan. That refugee camp was created when the Soviet invaded Afghanistan. I was there until the age of 14. I do have some memories of living there. I do remember a day when we were playing cricket at the playground, when all of a sudden, a man pulls out his gun and shoots at a young man named Surgul. Surgul's friend went home and brought his AK and chased his uncle for shooting his friend. At that moment, I was shocked, and all I remember was just laughing. That memory never faded away, but that's not the worst. I was around 10 when a Pakistani police officer who brought his duty AK because I had fought a fistfight with his son. Leaving a big gun culture community and coming to the United States, I thought I was safe here. But every time we were doing active shooter drills, it keep reminding me of the events that have happened in the past. After the Parkland shooting, we did organize March for Our Lives, and we did have walkouts at school. And I would like to share my speech from a walkout that we had in Highland High School. The easy access to firearms and lack of regulations in the U.S. creates a situation where our schools become open targets. The goal of this movement is to ask our lawmakers to put people before profit. Most people in America want sensible gun law, but the NRA's ability to lobby for permissive gun restrictions have given them incredible power and influence on political agenda in Washington and here in New Mexico. Over 30,000 people die from gun-related incidents here in the United States, which is twice as much as it is in Afghanistan, a war-torn country. I ask you, how many deaths will it take before we say no more? No more mothers and fathers having to witness their children dying. No more students going to school wondering if this is the day that their school will be the one riddled with bullets. And no more misguided attempts to solve the problems of corruption in Washington by considering that we arm teacher. Our schools are supposed to be places of learning, not like prisons which have metal detectors. My hope is that the will of people will prevail over the greed of corporate power. My hope is that these peaceful demonstrations of parents, students, and teachers will result in changing the laws to better protect us. And finally, my hope is that our schools will be safe places of learning for everyone, where future generations will prosper and deliver our lessons learned to the next generation. Sadly, I expressed my hopes about 2 years ago, and still, to this day, we have not seen any changes at the federal or even local levels. Here are some things that we can do to change this. New Mexico's legislative session is coming up, and remember to be active and ask your elected officials to support gun safety legislations. Ask your legislators to support race equality legislations and schools. And big elections are coming in 2020. Vote for those who are by the people and for the people. Thank you.
Thank you to Professor Nina Wallerstein, Valerie Martinez, Carol Pierce, Gilbert Ramirez, Detective Tish Young, Diana Lopez, and Riazula Likwaze for sharing your work and experiences. Now, here is Safe by Sage featuring Kesha and Chica, a song that speaks to the fear of mass gun violence among students and youth.
I don't want to be a moment of silence. I don't want to be an early grave. When I'm walking through the halls, I don't want to be brave. I just want to be safe.
We were just looking for a good time. Now it's goodbyes for no reason. Everyday gun season. Breathing was uneven. People down on knees and everything was a blur. Can't tell you where he was, but I remember where we were. Look, lately we can't even have our past.
We hope you've enjoyed this hour of healing and action. We'd like to give a huge thank you to Professor Nina Wallerstein, Valerie Martinez, Carol Pierce, and Gilbert Ramirez, Officer Tish Young, Diana Lopez, and Razula Alikwaze. And thank you to the UNM College of Population Health for inviting us into this discussion. Tonight's hour of radio was produced by Kateri Zuni and Roberta Rael. We'd like to thank KUNM for bringing the voices of young people to you, KUNM listeners. Our website is generationjustice.org, where you can check out all of our multimedia work and listen to our podcasts online, which are also available on SoundCloud and iTunes. Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the Conalma Health Foundation, and of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking donate. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Our last few songs for the night are This Is America by Childish Gambino and Good Life by G-Eazy featuring Kalani. I'm Edgar Cruz. Buenas noches, Nuevo México.
I gotta carry him. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is Gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm so dull like, yeah. Woo. We gon' blow like, yeah. Girl.
Can't explain how you make it in your team still status.